So welcome, KG and new listeners. Welcome back to Black Talk. My name is Michelle Simpson. And for those of you who may be new to the program, let me tell you a little bit about Black Talk. Black Talk is a monthly program that airs on Thursdays between 8:30 and 9:30 a.m. And Black Talk came about through a collaboration between the Boulder County NAACP and KGNU. And what Black Talk does is we center Black voices, thought, and vision. And so today, in keeping with centering Black voices, Black thought, and vision, we're going to be talking to three Boulder High School students. And we're going to be talking to Ami Diada. We're going to be talking to Yasmin Christopher and Anaya Freeman. And I am so pleased that they decided to join today. Thank you all for coming. And thank you all for participating in this conversation. And to begin, what I really wanted to talk about, because I believe the three of you know that the last Black Talk program featured a conversation between me and Uncle Red and his daughter. And what we did in that particular segment is we went back and began talking about an incident, an iconic incident, a horrifying one in history. And we talked about the 1921 Tulsa race massacre. And I wanted to begin there because what I wanted to ask you about is not, this isn't a test, so I'm not interested so much in what facts or figures you know about that particular incident, but I just wanted to find out from the three of you, and your experiences may be the same or different, when did you learn about the 1921 Tulsa race massacre? When did you learn? I'll start with you, Yasmin. When did you learn about it?
Ooh. Honestly, I think I haven't like learned deeply about it, but I've heard about it more when I was like in eighth grade.
Okay. And how did it come up?
Me and my parents, we like to talk deeply about like Black topics. And my mom, she is from the South. So Obviously it came up. She talked about the Tulsa race massacre and how it was so messed up and that there were actually other places that have gone through this too. And I was
absolutely.
Like,
yeah, absolutely. Where's your mom from?
Mississippi.
Okay. Yep. So Ami, how about you? When was your first brush with the 1921 Tulsa race massacre? When did you first hear about it?
To be quite honest, I've heard the name of it. I've heard Tulsa Race Massacre float around and I've heard about it in documentaries, but I haven't really got into full depth about it until I listened to the KGNU podcast, which was like a week ago. So that's when I like really started to know about what it actually was until I actually started doing my own research.
Yeah.
For being such an iconic piece of Black history, I didn't really know anything about it, and I'm kind of ashamed about that. And I'm kind of ashamed of like the curriculum. I'm taking AP history classes, and I have my entire career of high school, haven't heard zilch about it, nothing at all. And that makes me quite upset.
Well, I wouldn't be embarrassed about it. You're not alone. So many of us, you know, are still learning and gathering bits and pieces of our history. And I would think that if there's fault, it lies elsewhere in terms of you being educated about it, and that fault does not lie with you. But I also understand, again, that surprise. When you hear about an incident this widespread and an incident that had the impact that it did and feeling like, why didn't I know this? So that part I understand, but again, no shame in that, none. So how about you, Anaya?
I heard about it definitely a couple years ago, and it was kind of just brought up in conversation with my mom, because we're talking about like another Black issue, but and that came up and she told me like what happened, and I was shocked. I was like, oh my gosh.
Mm-hmm.
Like it was crazy to hear about that.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Well, tell me this. So now that you know, what was your initial response in hearing more about what happened, hearing about the incident, understanding that this place existed in Tulsa, Oklahoma, that had been nicknamed the Black Wall Street, the Greenwood District of Tulsa, that housed numerous Black families, Black individuals, that contained over 75 Black businesses, that was literally burned to the ground, that was literally destroyed. where you had white pilots dropping dynamite on this community to completely, completely not only devastate it, but eliminate it. So what was your feeling, if you can recall, how you felt upon learning about it? And when I say how you felt, sometimes I'm a big believer that what we feel begins in the body. But how did it make you feel?
I'll start.
Thank you, Yasmin.
Learning about like Black Wall Street, I love the fact that there was a community of Black people mm-hmm. who were financially stable and actually quite wealthy. Mm-hmm. I was heartbroken when I heard that they decided to burn it, like mm-hmm. blow it up basically. Like we cannot have anything that we want. And I was so sad, honestly, and disappointed in society on it. Like, why would you do that? What was the true modus behind that?
Mm-hmm. And I'm guessing that in learning about the 1921 Tulsa Race Massacre, you learned a bit about how it began. Yes?
Not that I recall of.
Okay, well, let me tell you a little bit about how things came to pass. And so you had a Black gentleman by the name of Dick Rowland. Dick Rowland was a shoeshine person. And he had entered an elevator. And the elevator, old-style elevators, you had to have an elevator operator. And the elevator operator was Sarah Page, who was white. Sarah Page, by kind of all remembrances of the story and by all reports, was 17. Dick Rowland was 18 or 19 years old. He enters the elevator that, as I said, she's operating. And older style elevators, many of which still exist. I grew up in New York, and I was going to say some of those elevators are still in operation, but they are pretty shaky. You know, as elevators go, when you enter them and the floor is moving and the whole thing is moving and you're just hoping you'll get from one floor to the other in one piece. But anyway, so he was in an older style because this was in 1920s, got into this elevator and the elevator was unstable. He lost his footing, and in the process of losing his footing, and we all do this, you know, where you might reach out to try to steady yourself, and he reached out to try to steady himself, and in that process touched her arm, Sarah Page, this white woman who was operating the elevator. She screams when he reaches to touch her, and he runs because he understands, as a Black man in Tulsa, Oklahoma, a Black man, again, in Tulsa, Oklahoma, who's in this limited space, this small space with this white woman, her screaming is going to bring not just the law, but various parties down on him. So he takes off. He takes off, and he's eventually caught. And once he's caught, he's placed into jail. And in being placed into jail, you had a number of Black individuals, Black men specifically, many of whom were World War I veterans, who decided that they would go down to the jailhouse and say to whoever was in charge that they would guard him, because their fear was that at that point, all kinds of rumors were flying. And of course, the rumors had morphed into sexualized assault, that somehow he had sexually assaulted her. And so they knew that what was coming next, more likely than not, was a lynching. So they volunteered to guard him. And the kind of jail authorities, law enforcement authorities, rejected that offer. They offered again, and they offered again. And on the third rejection, they were about to walk away from the jail. But a white individual, a white man, very aggressively approached them and tried to disarm one of the Black men. And in the scuffle of trying to disarm one of the veterans, a gun went off. A gun went off. No one was injured through this, but I think the very idea that you had Dick Rowland in the jail with the accusation of having sexually assaulted this white young woman, this scuffle outside of the jail, that was what began. That was the spark that ignited the Tulsa Race Massacre. And understand that the Tulsa Race Massacre went on for several days. So it started on one day, but it went on and over to a second day as well. And so when I spoke to Uncle Red, who lives here in Denver, about his experience, he was 6 months old at the time. but there's all this family history that has, again, been imparted to him about what happened, how his family was able to escape. Many people were not able to escape because they were just shooting Black people randomly. Black people were attempting to fight back, to resist, but of course they were outnumbered, outgunned, out everything. So you had many Black people who on those days were murdered in the street, whose bodies were thrown into the river, whose bodies were thrown into a mass grave. And you also had those individuals whose homes were destroyed. So they were then detained in a detention center and an arena, an outdoor arena. But anyway, that's kind of the long and the short of it. And I realize that's kind of a Reader's Digest version of what happened, but that was the spark that ignited it. Let me ask you this though, as I share this with you, because again, it's a piece of history and it's an important piece of history, but do you feel that we, and I'm saying we, because I'm an older Black person here, do you feel that we older Black folks look back too much? That we focus a bit too much on past incidences, such as the 1921 Tulsa Race Massacre, and just other historic events that have occurred and have had such an impact on not only our past, many would say on our present. Do you feel that way as young people? Anaya, how about you? What are you thinking about that? Do you think we focus too much on the past?
I think that y'all definitely don't focus on the past too much, because the events that happened in the past kind of still have an impact on today. And it's a part of our history too. It's still important to talk about because it happened and because of the way it happened. So yeah, I think you guys definitely don't dwell on the past too much. I think it's an important thing to talk about, and for especially like more generations to come to learn about it.
Mm-hmm. Okay, how about you, Ami? What are your thoughts about that?
Well, I mean, I personally just don't think the past was that long ago. So looking mm-hmm. back onto something that's still a huge part of our ongoing history, mm-hmm. I don't think that's anything to look back on. It's something that you're experiencing the effects of. Like mm-hmm. Uncle Red, that was a part of his life. He's not necessarily looking back on it. That experience and his history shaped the way he was, and the Tulsa Race Massacre, it reminisced throughout the nation and it reverberated and it has its effects, and it's symbolic to the Black struggle in the United States. It's iconic in that way.
How about you, Yasmin? What are your thoughts about that?
The same thing as Anaya and Ami. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Those are things that need to be talked about, because not only are they affecting the people that were involved with it, like directly involved with it, but also the descendants of those people. Mm-hmm. So,
okay. So what are some of the stories that you all have heard when you think about stories perhaps that have been passed down to you via family members? Sometimes they come from outside of family. I don't know how many of you are familiar with the phrase fictive kin. It's kind of a sociological term, but it speaks to extended family members that may not be related by blood. And Black folks, as I said, since time immemorial, have had kin and then fictive kin, those people who get drawn in to our families. So when you think about some of the stories you've heard via, as I said, some of those individuals, but maybe television, movies, social media, other forms of art, an artistic expression that really speak to where we've been, but perhaps where we are. So what are some of the stories that you've heard that have really stayed with you? What are some of those historical moments that have made an impact on you? So when you think about our collective history, it just kind of remains with you. It's something you walk with. What are you thinking, Miss Ami?
I'm trying to think of people in my life, especially people of color who have heard these mm-hmm. kinds of stories for, because to be honest, it's like 99% white people in my life. Mm-hmm. So, mm-hmm. I mean, from what I've heard from my like older relatives, they're all super progressive and they have been since the 60s and 70s. Mm-hmm. And I know my grandparents, especially on the East Coast, they idolize Bernie Sanders for his progressivism during the civil rights era and how he was an active member during mm-hmm. the protests and he marched, and look at him now, he is an active senator and he's still trying to press for those things. Mm-hmm. any kind of Black person that I look up to, and we look at like our progress then and now and how they exemplify that or how they've told stories about that, they're all simply just icons, but most of them dead. I would say like Booker T. Washington, W.E.B. Du Bois, Malcolm X, mm-hmm. Martin Luther King, they're all just iconic, but they had somewhat separate ideas for their goal for like the Black population of America, but like they just wanted us to succeed and progress. That's like the foundation of their ideas.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Anaya, what are your thoughts about that when you think about stories or you think about what you've read or what you've seen on television or in movies, as I said, various art forms that speak to where we've been? Kind of what are some of those stories or what are some of those individuals that have just kind of left an impression?
That's a really good question. I'm trying to think back to like stories, but I can't really think of anything right now. But I guess kind of just like the last century and like how we've came a long way and we're still coming from that. Mm-hmm. But my great uncle, he was like the first Black mayor of Boulder. So, you know, to have that building named after him, Pinfield Tate,
yeah,
that film, that's a great, yeah, that's a great feeling, you know, because it's like, you know, we're 1% of the population in Boulder, you know.
Right. Right.
So for us to have a Black mayor, that really still sticks out to me, even though it was a long time ago.
But not that long ago, actually. You know,
right. It wasn't that long ago, but yeah.
But I understand what you're saying. Yeah. Yeah. How interesting. I didn't realize you were related to Penn. Yes. Yeah. Yes. Absolutely. Remember him fondly, the entire family. So how about you, Yasmin? What are you thinking in terms of people or, again, whether it came through the arts, but something that has just left an impression on you?
Well, I haven't finished reading it, but I read Maya Angelou's, I think, her book. And honestly, it's made me grateful for all of the people that have helped us get to the place that we are now. Although we are still trying to work on it and work on, you know, racism and equal rights, I'm grateful for those people that they experienced those things and have grown up and said, hey, this is not correct. We need to fix something, not just for us, but also for our future generations and for other races too. So I guess I more look up to them as family than anything. And I don't really know how to explain it, but all I know is I'm grateful, like extremely grateful.
I think you're doing a good job.
I might have like said grateful too much, but hey, that's how I feel.
Now, if that's how you feel, it's all good. So tell me, what book by Maya Angelou are you reading?
I Know Why the Caged Bird Sings.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I wondered if that was it. Are you reading it for a class or are you just reading it?
Oh, I was just reading it. Like my uncle, he wanted me to like read a part of it, but my parents like, you should buy the book. And I was like, you know what? Why not? So I halfway through the book.
Now that's wonderful. Good for you. Highly recommend it. This month is Women's History Month, and Women's History Month came about in March of 1978 and has been celebrated across the United States. It got off to a slow start and then it caught fire, and now it's kind of this national thing that happens in March. March the 8th is International Women's Day, but again, the month of March is considered Women's History Month. What resonates with you, if anything, about this month? And I don't know if something's being discussed at school, if there's a special emphasis on it, and whether or not you feel connected to that or you feel somewhat distant from it. So let me start with you, Miss Ami.
For starters, I haven't heard anything about it at school. Okay. And like, I didn't really hear about Women's History Month until like honestly kind of recently in my life.
Mm-hmm.
But I think female empowerment has certainly caught on, especially with our generation, and I'm so thankful for that, because it goes just like beyond women to me. I think it stretches to like the LGBTQ plus community, mm-hmm. and how that also exemplifies like feminine or even masculine excellence. Can you give me 1 second? My cat is scratching at the door and I will finish what I'm saying because she's being very loud.
Oh, no problem. No problem. I know cats well. And Ami, while you're doing that, I'm going to ask you, Anaya, do you have any thoughts about that? The whole, again, Women's History Month piece.
We haven't really talked about it at school at all. I feel like I feel the same way about Women's History Month as I do Black History Month. Mm-hmm. Only having a month to celebrate Black history or women's history, when in reality, it shouldn't just be a month, you know? Mm-hmm. We should be learning about women's history all throughout the year and talking about women all throughout the year.
What are your thoughts about that, Yasmin?
Kind of going off by what Anaya said, mm-hmm. like learning about women, I think one woman that should really be talked about was, I forgot her name, but she was a trans woman in New York, a Black trans woman in New York. And I really think she needs to be talked about more than she's talked about now, which is not at all.
Can you describe her? Do you mind describing her? I'm just wondering who you're talking about.
I can look her up.
No, that's okay. I was just curious. I didn't know if you knew.
Name.
It's not Janet Mock.
No.
Okay.
Was it the, oh my gosh, what was her name? Was she like a huge like LGBTQ plus rights activist in New York?
Marsha P. Johnson.
I said Washington, and yeah.
Close enough.
Close enough.
You're in that Black names place.
You definitely.
No, you are. No, you are, because you know white folks don't have the last name Washington. Mm-hmm. After George, that went away. But I was going to say, Marsha P. Johnson. Yeah, her nickname was Marsha Pay No Mind Johnson, because I think she was just famous for saying, pay it no mind. Don't let that get you down. But yes, definitely in the forefront of what has become known as the gay rights movement. And it became known as the gay rights movement because many feel it was commandeered by gay white men. But of course, again, women were part of that, and other members of the LGBTQI plus community were also part of that. Yes, Marsha P. Johnson has slowly but surely is starting to get her due. But what does this look like when we talk about women's history? In many of my classes, we talk a lot about the concept of intersectionality and looking at overlapping oppression, looking at overlapping identities. And so how does that come up? How does that come up in the books you read, in the assignments you are asked to do? How does it come up in classroom discussions? And I'm really interested, you know, this is like a tripartite, question that I'm asking you, but I'm really interested to know, how does it feel? How does it feel to be a Black girl, Black femme, young Black woman in high school right now? How does it feel to be in the world, you know, at age 16, 17, what does that feel like? What does that look like? Because you know what? I can dust off my memories, but I got to use a big duster because it's been a long time. So tell me, what is that like? What does that feel like? What does that look like? Ami, go ahead.
Currently, I feel like a statistic, or like colleges want me because of what's on my demographics. Hmm. Like I'm Jewish, I am a female person of color, lower income, and high GPA. So colleges, they want that. They want to meet the quota, even though they're not supposed to use that word quota since like 1978 or 9. Mm-hmm. That's just simply how it is. I'm seen as a statistic, and that's like all I'm being defined as, not as the person I am, but just how it looks on paper. Mm-hmm. And that it truly is heartbreaking. And in terms of like representation and following what you want to do, the only person I've really heard that from, like in the classroom, is my science teacher. She completely advocates every single week, all the time. She talks about women, and especially women of color, need more representation in the science fields. Mm-hmm. We need more women in STEM, especially mm-hmm. women of color, because there are some brilliant minds out there that aren't being recognized. And there just needs to be more women in STEM. Mm-hmm. And I've already decided that I do want to go into STEM. I want to do medicine, and I've wanted to for years and years and years now. But she really put the nail in that. And I'm very determined to do that now, because I don't want to be seen as a demographic, and I do want to make a change.
No, well, thank you for sharing that. What about you, Anaya?
Yeah, same thing about feeling like a statistic and not really being seen as, you know, like, oh, like, this is a Black woman right here. But also, I do kind of feel like, I don't know the correct wording for it, but I'm just going to say kind of a trendsetter. Like, you know, people always, like, they want to be Black so bad, that kind of thing. You know, they talk like us, they do everything like us, but they don't really, like, they want to be Black until it's time to be Black, that kind of thing, you know? So that's just kind of how I feel about it.
You know, there's a quote, and I wish I could attribute it to somebody specifically. You've probably heard this before, but it goes something like, I'm paraphrasing, but it goes something like, and I wanna attribute it to Amanda Stenberg, but I could have it wrong. But it goes something like, you know, everybody loves Black culture. And she was saying something like, I wish people loved Black people as much as I love Black culture. So what you were saying just kind of reminded me of that particular quote. How about you, Yasmin?
Honestly, when it comes to like my teachers, I feel kind of lonely because I don't really have a teacher that I can like go to and talk about my problems and like what I want to be in life, because they don't really understand what it's like to be a Black woman in America. They're all Caucasian, they're all white. Mm-hmm. And more or less, I feel like I can't talk to them about things that I want to talk to them about. And that just, it's not a good feeling at all, like at all. It's really lonely. Like I have my friends, I have my family, but it's truly like lonely.
You are listening to Black Talk on KGNU, Boulder, Denver, and Fort Collins. What would you like to talk about? What would you want to talk about if there was an ear, if there was someone who was willing to listen? And I think part of what you're saying also is not just the listening, but somebody who would understand what it was you were saying.
I guess about how I feel, about how comfortable I am in the classroom, which is not very comfortable at all. There are a lot of topics that it's like, I don't want to hear about that. And there's a lot of words that's like, I don't want to. Like last year in my English class, my teacher said the N-word in a book, which is understandable, but it was wrong if you are bleeping out every single other cuss word and just saying that part, just saying a racial slur and not saying any other like bad words. So I felt really uncomfortable. I couldn't go up to her and talk to her like, hey, I don't feel comfortable with you saying this. I feel like you somewhat just disregarded the fact that you have two African Americans in this classroom and you didn't really care about how we felt about it. I can't tell her that. So I guess that's more of what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Like be a little bit not sensitive, but like more considerate of how we feel.
Now you raise a good point, because that was one of the questions I wanted to ask all of you is, when issues of race come up in the classroom, how does that make you feel? Or how does that cause you to feel? So on the one hand, how does it cause you to feel when issues of race come up in the classroom? And how do you feel when issues of race don't come up? You know, in other words, when you feel they should come up and that this is a reasonable conversation to have, and it looks like somehow we're stepping over the elephant in the middle of the room. But then also, how do you feel on the other side of that when issues of race are raised and you're feeling like, oh my gosh, you know, now perhaps I feel on the spot. So I did I did want to ask about both of those, or both of those experiences. How does that come up? How does it make you feel? Anami, it looks like you were wanting to say something about that.
Well, I mean, in one of my classes, AP Language and Composition, we talk about race all the time. We read The Fire Next Time. We read Huckleberry Finn. So we have to do a lot of discussions surrounding slavery and race. I have a friend in that classroom, and we have a little inside joke, and we talk about how the second race comes up and I say anything, I could say the most obscure thing and everyone will just simultaneously nod their heads. Yes, like I completely agree with that. Mm-hmm. We find it hilarious because no matter what I say surrounding race, I could say like the stupidest thing. Everyone just agrees. Like uh-huh. they feel like they're actively being a great ally to the Black community because they're nodding their heads and agreeing with me. But we joke around that like there's only two people in that class who actually have solidified opinions, and it's me and her, because mm-hmm. everyone else just kind of falls in line like sheep.
Yeah.
No. And mm-hmm. I haven't really experienced much of like, if we talk about slavery, everyone's going to turn their heads in my direction, mm-hmm. but it is more like I set the stage and everyone just has to agree with me, because like what are they going to do, disagree with a Black person, like one of the only Black people in the entire school? Like, can't do that. They're going to seek a lot of fire, mm-hmm. a lot of heat seeking missiles are going to come at them. So
I understand that. What do you all want to know more about? What do you feel is missing? You know, so when you think about your education, and I'm not just talking about Boulder High School now, I'm just talking about just in your world, in your life, what do you want to know more about?
I would absolutely love to know more about Black entrepreneurs or Black people mm-hmm. that have invented things that we use now. Mm-hmm. I would love to know about that.
Okay. And I see you and Naya seem to be, I don't know if you're agreeing with her or you're just gesturing that you agree, but have some other ideas about something you'd like to know more about. No, your voice went out. So I just wanted to ask you to repeat what you were saying.
I was agreeing with Ozzy and Ami.
I think Naya was saying that she agreed with both Yaz and I, because I typed in the chat my hair, because that's something I want to know more about, because I have no idea what I'm doing with my hair. Like, I don't. That's why I have extensions and braids, mm-hmm. like at least like 3 or 4 times a year, because I don't know how to take care of it. And mm-hmm. That's something I would really like to know how to do.
You know, that is funny. Thank you, Anaya. I'm working on a course, and the title of the course, I haven't unveiled it, but I've been working on it for about a year and a half. And the name of the course is the Politics and Poetry of Black Women's Hair. So you'll have to come up and take the class, you know, but, hair is a thing, How does hair come up? How does hair come up in kind of your day to day, or just being in Boulder, just being in high school? How does hair come up? Because hair for Black women is not a small thing. I mean, hair is political. Hair is social. Hair has a lot of very different meanings for us in so many different ways. I don't know if you all are familiar with the fact that it's been about, I'm horrible with chronology, so I'm going to say a year. It's probably been 2, because I'm saying a year, since the legislature passed the Crown Act. And the Crown Act, again, provided Black women the opportunity to wear their hair however they wanted to. Because in many so-called, and I'm doing air quotes, folks, I realize this is radio, in many professional situations, Black women were being reprimanded that their hair was not professional, or their hair didn't suit whatever the environment was. If they were working in a restaurant, or if they were working in an office setting. So a number of Black women collectively created legislation, and it was passed, and it's called the Crown Act. And so what that's supposed to do is it's supposed to stem people being reprimanded for the way they wear their hair, because Black women's hair is endlessly fascinating to many. But as I said, there's a whole history around that. I mean, an entire history, and one of the pieces and parts of the class that I'm going to teach will focus on that history, and a focus on the history, for example, when Black women were in Louisiana, for example, you were required. It was not, it wasn't an option. You're required to wrap your hair. You could not show your hair. So in order for you to come out on the street, you had to wrap it. Now, I'm somebody who loves to wrap my hair, but you know, that's my option. So again, when you think about some of these laws in the military, for years, Black women couldn't wear braids. That was considered just anathema to being a member of the military. So, you know, our hair is endlessly fascinating, and not just from a, you know, what do I do with my hair? How do I do my hair? Which is important. And again, a concrete example of one of the issues and things we may want to know more about, but it's been illegal in some parts of our history and in certain parts of the country to just wear your hair, however you elect to wear it. But as I said, it's endlessly fascinating to many people. And that can be problematic, especially if people feel like they can touch your hair or comment on it when that's not something you're inviting. So what do you want to know about your hair? Just how to do it?
Yeah, I want to know how to take care of it because I'm really bad at it. It's super damaged because of years of like excessively straightening it. Because when I blow, when I do a, like I give myself a blowout and I straighten my hair, it doesn't straighten. It immediately just sticks out. And the second it's even the tiniest bit humid, huge afro. And it's taken me a really long time to like, and I'm still struggling with it. I'm trying to embrace like the curls and my natural curl pattern in my hair, because I thought the very ideal thing that everyone wanted to see on a Black girl was straight hair, like pin straight, dead straight hair. And I don't feel that way anymore, and I'm so happy for that. But like, now I'm at a loss because like I don't know what to do with my hair now. I just keep it in braids or I put it up because I don't have time to do it. I can't make time to do it because I'm so busy. Thankfully, I have my little friends here who probably know a little better than I do about how I can fix my hair situation. So,
you know, on campus years ago, we had a group. It was called Campus Curlies. And it was for women who were wearing their hair naturally and or wanted to. And one of the best things about that group that I loved, we had a product swap because I'm a product junkie. So I will buy anything. I love trying new things. And so we had one night, we had a product swap. It was the best thing because you could try different products. You know, you didn't have to purchase anything. You just took what was on the table that you wanted to try, you know, but there is a whole science and art to Black women's hair and Black hair, especially here in Colorado. It's so intensely dry. So some of what you can do, for example, if you're living on the East Coast or you're living in the Southeast or what doesn't work. But it's interesting, the person who I go to for hair would love to come in and do something for you all, like do a little workshop or seminar. So if BSA is ever interested, she would come in a flash because again, she's so big on education and that people need to learn how to treat their hair well. Because so much of treating our hair well is how we treat ourselves. And she's just a big believer in that. So if you're ever interested, let me know. I know we've gone off on like a hair tangent, but hair is important. You know, hair is part of who we are. And I think it was Oprah. I think it was Oprah way back when she had her talk show. And she used to say, hair is to Black women what weight is to white women. That we really kind of focus. We really have like this laser focus on hair where white women are always concerned about weight and always talking about it, you know? So I wonder, what do you wish we, and as I said, I just had a birthday, so I'm thinking, I'm feeling older by the second. What do you wish older Black folks knew about the time you're living in? What do you wish we knew about your lives, about your dreams, about your fears, just about what it's like to be you? You know, I often think as a professor, you know, I'm with students all the time, young people all the time. And I'm always asking questions, and I think I know a lot, but I know I don't know enough. So what do you wish we older Black folks knew about the time you were living in and how you're feeling just in the world? You know, how you're feeling in your space, whether that space is Boulder, whether that space is Boulder High, whether that space is Colorado. How do you feel? I mean, what do you want us to know? What do you think we may miss? What do you think, Yasmin? What do you want us to know?
Maybe that when it comes to people being nice to us because we're Black, it's pretty much fake. Mm-hmm. I guess you can be a little bit gullible when people are being really nice to you and they're seeming like they're an ally to you, but it's like they have terrible motives behind them. And I don't know if you guys experienced that too, but I know I've experienced it a little bit, people being nice to me just so they can like get that, oh, I have a Black friend, or oh, I can do this, I can say that because I am cool with a Black person, or just trying to take advantage of us due to the fact that we are Black, and mostly they think that we're dumb, which obviously we're not. So that would probably be something that I would love to tell you guys, that although we still experience the same things that you guys experienced before, but it's a lot more sugar-coated, if you understand what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, no, I understand what you mean. I believe I understand what you mean. How about you, Anaya? How does that play out for you? What do you think?
I can't really think of anything off the top of my head, but I do agree with what Yazzie said, because I feel like nowadays everybody's so obsessed with like having that token Black friend, or I can say this, my friend's Black, or my this is Black, or whatever, you know? Mm-hmm. So I feel like they're only trying to get closer to us so that they can, I can't think of the word, it's not idolized, but I guess just, or they'll be like, oh, I'm not racist, so they can like give themselves a pass to kind of be racist. I don't know.
I think I know what you mean. I understand.
Yeah, I hope I explained that kind of.
No, I think you. No, I think you did. I think you communicated it well. How about you, Ami?
Kind of for just like older generations in general. Our generation is super, super social media oriented. Mm-hmm. That's where all the hip new stuff is coming from. I think a lot of like shared violence and discrimination and stuff, you see it online. Like that's the only way like you're really going to see it, and it's certainly more widespread. But there was a saying I heard, I don't know who it was from, but like the racism that occurred in the past is still the same as it is in the future, it's just being recorded. You're mm-hmm. seeing more of this stuff just because it's recorded and shared widespread. Mm-hmm. So I think there's like a huge diffusion of fear because of that, especially when George Floyd passed. Mm-hmm. Like we started seeing stuff pop up like pimples everywhere.
Right. You know, you raise a good point. One of the questions I wanted to ask you is, what are the events that have left an impression on you? And when I say events, I mean more recent, because we were talking about some historical events, but what are those events that you are likely to talk about as you get older? Or what are those events that you're likely to carry with you and maybe share with nieces, nephews, children, you know, whatever turn your life takes? What are you thinking, Yasmin?
I think this is more like I would share them because it's funny to me, but the fact that when the Black Lives Matter and the All Lives Matter, all that whole fiasco, and the fact that people were like, oh, All Lives Matter, everyone should be recognized. I think I'd probably tell my nieces and nephews, like, this is hilarious. People mm-hmm. think that because we are putting Black Lives Matter, we're trying to put them down. We're trying to forget the fact that they also go through things too, or that we're just trying to uplift Black people because we are going through a lot of troubles, and so are other races, just not the white race. Mm-hmm. And I would probably be laughing in my seat, like, this is the life that we live in. People think because we want to be recognized, we're trying to put them down. And it's stupid to me, honestly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, in my classes, we sometimes talk about a concept that I often introduce called oppositional thinking. And the oppositional thinking, it has to be this or that. I mean, it's kind of very binary. So if I love this, I must hate that. If I embrace this, I can't embrace that, which seems not only short-sighted, it's illogical. So an example that I've given to some students who've struggled with this and oftentimes feel blowback around the Black Lives Matter, All Lives Matter deal is, you know, to imagine that there is someone who is working towards ending cancer because cancer has run rampant through many, many, many communities. And this whole idea that that individual is unlikely to walk up to a booth, or let's say there's a march or there's a race to end breast cancer and say, stop, stop, stop. You know, everyone in my family who has died from cancer has lymphoma. I mean, that wouldn't occur to any of us. So not to be able to understand the whole need to address violence and inequities against Black people. And it appears that Black life doesn't matter. So to be able to spotlight that is not suggesting that other people don't experience hardship. I mean, one has nothing to do with the other. And so to try to collapse them, as I said, is illogical. But it's that kind of knee-jerk response that sometimes comes with various conversations about Black lives. What's different? What's different, if anything, speaking about lives, what's different, if anything, about your lives than your white counterparts? And let me take that a little further. What's different about your lives than your white counterparts? Or if you see a difference between your life and your life experiences and what you're going through now, because you're living now, and perhaps your Black male counterparts. And I will, I should have inserted this caveat. I'm a women and gender studies professor, as well as some other things. So I'm always thinking about these types of issues. So again, what's different, if anything, about your lives and your white counterparts, or perhaps your Black male counterparts?
I think in terms of our white counterparts, we have to work a lot more harder. And a lot of times we have to prove ourselves because, you know, especially if you're like a Black kid in an advanced class, mm-hmm. you kind of have to like prove that you're not dumb, or because they see you as lower too. Mm-hmm. And I think for our Black counterparts, our male counterparts, especially the ones we go to school with, some of them are, I guess, a little disconnected mm-hmm. from their Black selves, if that makes sense, because they're around a lot more white people and they're adopted by white people. Mm-hmm. So I think they not like identify more with white people, but they feel more comfortable with white people mm-hmm. when at the end of the day, like, you're always going to be seen as Black, as a Black man too. So yeah, that's kind of just what I have to say about it.
Yeah, no, thank you for sharing that. What are you thinking, Yasmin?
Probably the same thing that Anaya said about us having to work harder, but mm-hmm. also being, like, compared to our white counterparts, to being not trying to be a stereotype, if you understand what I'm, like, trying to prove yourself, like, hey, I'm not loud all the time. Mm-hmm. I'm not aggressive. So basically had to show them and the people around you that you are not this person that they make you up to be. Mm-hmm. And compared to our Black counterparts, honestly, I don't know. I don't really know the difference other than they have to be a little bit more aware of what they're doing. Mm-hmm. Due to the fact the cops and like mm-hmm. you said, with the Black man and the white woman in the elevator, you have to be a lot more careful. Mm-hmm. Although, yeah, Black women have to be careful too. We are being taken mm-hmm. just because we have melanin and we're beautiful, but men have to be a lot more aware. They have to make sure, oh, I'm not touching this. I'm not touching that. I'm not looking at a certain thing incorrectly or something like that. If you understand what I'm trying to say.
I do. No, and I appreciate your perspective. How about you, Ami?
no matter what, with the white counterparts, I think we're always going to be seen as different, whether it's like extreme praise or extreme scrutinization. Like, we'll be seen as lesser, or we'll be seen like we'll be completely fetishized and it's disgusting no matter what. Or there's like the complete opposite, where people are just colorblind and they don't recognize our history, and we're always going to have to lead harder lives because of how white people will view us. And it's not like we'll necessarily always be experiencing equity, but I think the approach a lot of white people take on looking at us and like impressions is certainly like it definitely needs to be reformed in some way. And I guess for our Black male counterparts, I think they go through a little bit more extremes than like we do, because the way like they approach, how do I explain this? They have to be careful about what they touch and how they look, how they're dressing, how do they speak to someone, if they say yes ma'am, no ma'am. Because they could get under fire like that. They'll go under fire like that. But at the same time, if a Black male does something that everyone sees is cool, or that guy has a lot of swagger, we could be seen, like a Black female would be seen as a ratchet for doing the same thing. Black culture and like the praise of it comes through male representation and not female. But I guess more recently it's changed, because we have a lot of up and coming Black female artists who are also getting a lot of plays and are starting to also shape and define Black culture too, like Doja Cat, SZA, Megan Thee Stallion, of course. And yeah, I mean, it kind of just depends on like this intersectionality.
Yeah. So my last question for you three is this. You know, as I'm looking out, I'm seeing three beautiful Black women. And I'm not just kind of saying that. I mean it. But I wonder if you know that. So in other words, my question is, do you feel that?
Growing up, maybe not. I've grown up in a society where you have to look light skin or white, or for me, skinnier, not as big as I am, because I'm a bigger girl, honestly. But as I grew up and I kind of expressed that to my parents, they were like, look at your aunt. They're big girls and they're beautiful and they love themselves. And as I looked more out at how people perceived me and how they wanted me to be and what men or women liked, I was like, I'm gonna find someone who loves me for who I am. But I have to start with loving myself. If I wanna be loved by someone other than family members, I have to love myself. So now, yes, I think I am extremely beautiful and I'm very confident in my body. Now I do have my moments where I'm like, maybe not, but I think I'm very beautiful and I think I know that.
That's lovely. Thank you. Thank you for sharing that. How about you, Miss Ami?
To be honest, not really. And I can't like entirely blame it on like myself. I think the environment I grew up in is like the white girl with blue eyes and beach blonde hair will always be the standard. Like my closest friend of 9 years, she was the girl that every single guy wanted. And that really took a toll. I was complete opposite of her. We even joke sometimes that like I'm the Black version of her, she's the white version of me. But yeah, I think I'm getting better at self-love, especially for being Black, and I like starting to love the melanin on myself. But it's hard. Yeah. It's not easy. And the only thing I'm looking forward to is that like it is going to get better. And I will be able to love myself like through and through.
No, it's a journey. It can be a journey. How about you, Anaya?
Yeah, going back to what they both said, growing up, it was definitely very hard, especially when you're in a more white environment. And, you know, most of your friends are white and, you know, all the boys, like the white girls, and you're kind of just the Black girl there. But I think now I'm definitely going into myself more and I'm loving myself a lot more. And I appreciate every aspect about me. For versus trying to be like, oh, I wish I was lighter, or I wish I had green eyes or blue eyes, or I wish I was skinny. I love myself, and you know, I feel like I don't need to be light skinned, or I don't need to have blue eyes to be pretty. Like, I'm just pretty how I am.
Yeah. Well, from my perspective, you're there. But thank you all so much for spending some time with me and sharing your thoughts and being vulnerable, which takes a lot of courage. I really, really appreciate it. And maybe we'll circle back around, see how you're doing in another year or so, kind of where you are and what you're thinking. So KG and you listeners, you've been listening to Black Talk. Black Talk, again, is a collaboration between the Boulder County NAACP and KGNU. And our segment appears and is aired every Thursday, every second Thursday of the month, 8:32 to 9:30. So please tune in. And until next time.
While he was steaming, I was steaming in the Beamer, just steaming. Can't believe that I called my men cheating. So I found another way to make him pay for it all. So I went to Neiman Marcus on a shopping